Okay, so welcome.
You might want to give me 2 seconds here. I just put in a bite of the garden roll.
Okay. I'm just going to talk a little bit, just to say a few words, and then you chew.
Okay,
so
welcome. Sorry, darling.
Welcome to a specially recorded session of Macrobiotic Miracles free conference call. I am here with our guest, very special guest, Melody Gardeau. My name is Fia Kushi, and I am the host of the call. For those of you who don't know me, I am the third son of Micho and Aveline Kushi, and I have spent my whole life involved in macrobiotics, working in food companies, bookstores, restaurants, and as well as the Kushi Institute, managing the Kushi Institute. And now I teach and counsel people and travel all over the place teaching macrobiotics. My special guest today is a Grammy-nominated multi-platinum album Melody Gardeau, a fabulous musician, and she had a car accident at the age of 19, and when the doctors couldn't help her, she looked for alternatives and used macrobiotics together with musical therapy, and that helped her recover from her problems. So I'm here with Melody. And she's just going to share a little bit about her story, and perhaps we can have her come on a call at another time later live so that our callers and website visitors can join us in the future with a live call with Melody. But for the moment, Melody was here with us. I do want to mention that the information provided on this call is not intended as health advice or as a replacement of your physician, nutritionist, or health professional. If you do have a health condition, please seek the appropriate medical attention. These calls are the sole effort of myself, Fia Kushi. I'm not affiliated with any group, institution, or organization. They are offered as a free service to celebrate humanity and specifically the lives of wonderful individuals on their journey through healing and life. I do accept donations to help continue this effort. Donations are not tax deductible. To make a donation, please visit my website at www.fiakushi.com. This call is being recorded and will be posted on my website afterwards for all the website visitors. So here we are with Melody Gardeau. Thank you so much for joining our call, and I'm just so thrilled. I met you a couple of years ago and saw you in concert, and that was fabulous. And since then, your success has really taken off, and you're such an inspiration to me and to everybody I know.
Yeah, we met in New York.
Yes, that's right. Uh huh. At the winery.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
It was a beautiful thing. I remember that.
Uh huh. Yes, and your performance was fabulous. I could see a Grammy all over you at that time. And
Grammy as in grandma, I hope. I hope not.
No. Just briefly, if you would, I know we don't have a lot of time, but just share a little bit about what happened, like how you recovered from with macrobiotics. I mean, you were in the hospital and had that horrible accident. What did the doctor say? Did they say that you wouldn't be able to recover at all?
Well, you know, it was really complicated because I wasn't initially diagnosed as I was almost 7 months later because I had a complicated injury. And to no fault of Western medicine was it tricky. It just was that it was a complicated thing that I wound up having to be rehospitalized for and then was eventually kind of diagnosed the right way. So
I see.
What happened, though, in the processes of the first 11 months is that under the care of Western medicine, with so many medications that one is given for pain and just the general overall well-being, they have such an effect on your body. And I was a young woman. I was 19 and just about 20. And I found that my body was shutting down. And, you know, when you take, for instance, when you're taking, like, heavy pain medicines, oftentimes the first side effect of that medicine is that you're unable to go to the bathroom, you know, so you have to take secondary medications. It shuts down your digestion. And so for, you know, the first 7 days while you're in the hospital, you're given heparin injections and all these other things, and you just are unable to flow as a human being. Your energy becomes stagnant, you know, and this is a normal functioning process of any human being to be able to take in and eliminate waste.
That's right.
You know, so to have that come up, you feel sick. You feel sick all the time because you have all these toxins in your body. And it goes for any functioning percentage. And I had fractured my pelvis, so that was everything. But over time, it wasn't only that. It was like my gallbladder and my kidneys and everything were receiving such great pressure. And I had gone to see a woman who specialized in Reiki and Japanese medicine, and she started talking to me about macrobiotics. And she said, you know, this is an interesting thing. And she gave me a book. It was I think the macrobiotic guide to health. It was the one that has the grains on the front. It's a pink and white book.
Oh, yes. Okay, the macrobiotic path to total health, yes.
That's it. See, I had it almost all put together, but I've read so many books by now, I've forgotten the name of it. But I found it interesting because not only in that book did you have, you know, indications of what to do for cooking and things like that and why and the reasons behind it, but there were case studies and documents about how it had been used. And as a logical person, I thought, well, this is really interesting because it's not just unifaceted. It doesn't only pertain to one particular individual. Certainly it is rooted in the treatment of various kinds of cancers and things, but it was everything as simple as a migraine to behavioral issues, you know, psychological issues. And I thought that was so interesting. And so for me, at one point, I just woke up in the morning and I decided I wasn't going to take medicine any longer because it was affecting my body in a physical way. It was affecting my mental state, made me very cloudy and dizzy. And what it kind of does is it doesn't necessarily take away the physical pain in your body. It just makes you apathetic about it, so you don't care. And you still have it, but you're just not really conscious of it. Really conscious of anything else in the end. So my experience with medicine at that point was so so just not positive that I had no fear about abandoning it. Mm-hmm. And in my case, that made me like patient type B. So I went to my doctor and I told him what I wanted to do, and they proposed that you slowly come off the medication, but I took a risk and I just stopped it altogether because I don't have an addictive personality in that way. I didn't feel like it would be troubling. So the first thing I did is I started with learning how to just cook rice. You know, and I know that sounds crazy, but circumstances, it was like there's an art to just doing the basic things.
Yeah, so you could walk around and you could move?
Not particularly. I had a walker.
Okay.
But I would stand in front of the stove with my walker and just, for, it actually took me about 4 hours each time, and every time I was rereading the directions. But what was interesting is that the first foods I could take in, even before I had stopped the medication altogether, I had started kind of experimenting with macrobiotics, and the first thing I was eating was congee. And it, because my digestive tract was in such a state of alarm from all of these medications, nothing was staying in a healthy way in my body, and nothing felt good. Even if I was hungry, I didn't want to eat because it just didn't feel good to take food in. So I started with something which is normally given to people who are very sick or children who are very, very ill, and just having congee that was really long cooked. I'd put in a little bit of ginger and a little bit of sea salt and try to just get some kind of mineral in my body, and also ginger just to help the digestion. I thought, okay, this is great. And I was doing ginger compresses on my abdomen and also on the areas that were sore. So inside and outside, trying to do the same thing, salt baths and Epsom salt baths on the outside, as well as taking in sea salt to try and give myself any kind of mineral. And then I would slowly start to introduce the concepts of seaweed. And for someone in the Western world, I mean, outside of sushi, you never hear about it. So when you see someone making hijiki or arame or these things and they're, like, preparing it, it's a little scary. But when you taste it and it's done correctly, it's so beautiful.
Yes,
So I found my way sort of through the darkness just by experimentation, and I moved on, thankfully, from just kanji, because that isn't very sustaining after a while.
Right. But kanji, you're saying kanji?
Kanji? Yeah, like it's the when you take rice and you use about 5 parts water.
Oh, yes, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe you say it a different way.
Yes, just soft rice that's fine.
Yeah.
Just wanted to clarify that for people.
But we cooked it in a crock pot. And actually what we would do is, because I was in a hospital, I was in a rehabilitation center, I would make it for about a week, and I would keep it there and then reheat it myself. And I was teaching the nurses about it, and they were just amazed. Some of them were Indian. Some of them practiced Ayurvedic medicine. So what happened is I was teaching them a little bit about what I knew about macrobiotics and yoga.
Uh-huh.
And they were teaching me about palm healing and Ayurvedic medicine. And so nurses and I became like partners. And it was just a shared experience. It was beautiful.
Yes, wonderful. So then once you started cooking and eating that way, how long did it take for you to recover?
Well, my recovery was not just of a internal kind. It was also an external, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, everything, because my whole life had been halted, you know. But in a way, one could argue I'm still recovering, if you think of it that way. But the thing that I noticed was within the first 3 months, I had like a 30% reduction in my pain level. Now, when you look at the grand spectrum of things, you have to factor in the fact I was coming off of heavy medicines, about 11 of them.
Wow.
And, you know, many of them were just secondary medications for the other. And that's what I found so baffling. I was like, well, you take this pill to feel better, but you have to take these two pills to counter the first pill. And I was like, this is ridiculous. So after about 11 medications, I was like, when they told me I needed two more, I said, no way.
Wow.
And I started doing regular treatments with this woman, and she taught me a little bit more about the macrobiotics and also not just the idea of macrobiotics, but the idea of your chi, you know, the energy in your body. And she would do readings to tell me how things were feeling, what was happening with my gallbladder, what's happening with my spleen. And I was very conscious of it. And all the different modalities together kind of centered around this energetic way of healing yourself. It was through the food, it was through meditation, it was through just consciousness and awareness, the complete and total opposite of the mind state that I had been in.
Yes.
So I found it beautiful. Beautiful. And the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, sorry.
No, please.
The way that there's no waste, really. You know, when you look at the menu that's proposed in the book even, they say take the remnants of what's left from dinner that day and turn it into breakfast.
Yes.
And the water, you know, you save the water to use for another application as well. When you wash something, when you soak something, sometimes the seaweed that you're soaking can be used for a saltier component of another recipe. It just felt so harmonious.
Yeah.
And what it taught me in the end is probably something which is like the thing which goes unsaid about microbiotics, but it deals with every kind of food that is great in the world, and that's that you take the time and the care and the love
to
make this thing, and it becomes of a higher frequency and a higher vibration. So there's just this great amount of love and care that's inserted into the cuisine, and they say, you know, when you're cooking, when you're angry, it comes through the food, and of course.
Yes, that's right.
I found it like a meditation in a way.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's right. I always judge my own condition by how my rice comes out, you know.
That's beautiful.
Yes. So also you mentioned that you used musical therapy. Tell me about that.
Well, that was the beginning processes as well. I mean, so much was intersecting. It was as if the radius of who I was at that moment was incredibly small, and I just had sectors and sectors of different paths that were coming from all different directions, from Reiki to macrobiotics to musical therapy to hearing therapy, physical therapy. Everything was just stemming out like roots from a tree.
Yes.
But the idea of musical therapy was proposed to me because I wasn't speaking, and I was having a hard time expressing myself verbally. I had this condition called anomia.
Uh-huh.
And what was happening is the connector between my brain and my mouth somehow was broken, so that not all the words I was trying to say would come out, or if they did, they'd come out like molasses.
Oh,
very, very slow and impossible to kind of understand. The inflections were all wrong. So they proposed I do music therapy not only as a way to just pass the time, but a way to really develop the mind and reconnect these pathways in the brain, which had been broken. If you envision your brain as two fists, you know, you have the left side and the right side, there are tiny little strings that connect them like the San Francisco bridges. You know, there's a million of them.
Right.
When I had gotten hit, all of those bridges went out, and so I had these two functioning portions of my brain, which, you know, in all intents and purposes were kind of damaged in different areas, but the thing that was most affected was those connectors, those neural pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And so to rebuild them, it takes time, and it takes therapy and different kinds of things, but music happens to be one of the only things that does it quick and does it well. They don't necessarily know why. It's something to do with a component of the ears and also the way that you must connect your brain to your fingers when you're playing. It's almost like your thoughts must come out of your fingers immediately for you to be able to do that. And so that also connected my speaking ability. It was like taking everything and seaming it to all of the limbs of my body, whether the limbs were at my lips, or the limbs were at my fingertips, or the limbs were in my elbow, which had to bend around the guitar. It was pushing through, like carving new tunnels. So it really surfaced as the leading and kind of principal therapy to help me regain some kind of cognitive function just as a human being, and then eventually became sort of the beaconing light that was shining above, going, this is what you need to do. So
amazing.
It had a very unusual way of inserting itself into my life, but
yes. So basically, when you say musical therapy that you did, you were just playing your guitar and singing? Is that what you
did? Well, what happened is I didn't really know how to play the guitar. I was a piano player, but I believe when you learn the piano first, you can learn any other instrument in the world.
That's true. I have that experience myself.
It's an amazing thing, and people talk about that all the time. Something about the way that you must connect and then disconnect your hands in order to function as two things. It applies itself, and I saw the application on the guitar, so I just started looking and playing, and what I would do is I'd find three notes on the guitar neck that I liked and just try to remember them. And that sounds so silly, but at the time, you have to understand, my memory was so bad that I, 5 minutes after I did something, would forget it. So this was my first challenge. It was trying to endure some kind of sense of recognition for the moments of the past, which only happened 5 minutes ago, and then to tie them together and slowly extend my sense of time as far as my memory was concerned, because my short-term memory was terrible. This is why it took me 4 hours to make rice. I would go back and forth from that pot to that book like you can't even imagine. My fingerprints were covering the page that talked about how to boil brown rice, just because I'd go back and forth and back and forth like a confused pigeon, you know. It was really funny. In truth, there was a part of me that was almost sitting above in the ether somewhere, watching, going, what are you doing? You know, because you have a cognitive sense of who you were, but it's so vaporous, it just seems like a past life. So there's a part of me that's conscious, and at the same time, I'm just lost. And this was happening in the music, too. So both the learning of how to cook and the learning of how to play, I mean, were tests. They were like hard tests for me at that moment, and as some might find it embarrassing to admit, me, I kind of latch onto it as a postmark and a landmark for how far I have come and how you can, you know, explain now to someone how to do these things. But at the time, the secondary step for me was learning how to speak, and what I did is I started humming the notes that I was singing in order to try and remember them, because I thought, okay, well, if I can't remember them by hearing them, maybe I can remember them by speaking them, like the way you would when you were in college and you were trying to learn, say, like history or art history. They have this thing where they find that if you use all of your senses and you make that fact a radius, it's like a central point, and then you go all the way around it and find every which way to look at it. It's like you're examining it from all sides with your senses. suddenly it clicks in your brain. So if you had a fact about a basilica, you'd make a picture of it, you'd turn it around and have the name on it. You would have the date that it was created, you'd make a flashcard, or you would write the information down. You would record your teacher as he's giving you the dictation and listen back to it later, or you'd read yourself the chapter on tape and listen back. You know, all of these things. I mean, I even tried to pass out on my books and pass it off as osmosis. I'd, like, get the text to float into my brain, you know. So
Wow. All
of these things I applied to the guitar and
yeah.
then tried to wind it around and become more familiar with something which was very foreign to me. And what it wound up doing simultaneously was developing my speech with no intention. I mean, when a doctor said to go home and do music as therapy, to go play, there was no handbook, there was no instruction.
Right.
It was just go do what you can. So I just did the best I could. And I'm a very, in terms of my academics, I was a very studious individual. I was always working to a high degree, so my personal motivation is high. So for me to go home without a handbook wasn't devastating, but for someone else it could have been, you know, very lost. But for me, I was determined, you know, I felt that. And so certain people could have benefited more from a guideline, but when there is none, it's almost better because there's freedom. You decide what works for you. So I found that, and then slowly but surely started to make recordings of it, because I thought, okay, if I record it and listen back to the whole thing, that'll help me. And then one day I was doing that, and a song popped out, and that's really how I got to where I was. It was as if I had finally found the one place in the world where my speech was not impaired,
uh-huh.
and it was through the chords and sort of the lines of the guitar.
Now, before you had the accident, were you singing before, or?
No, you know, I played piano in piano bars as a side job during college,
uh-huh.
but it was a hobby and it was easy, and I never thought anything of it.
And
you know,
and you never sang when?
I was just playing.
Just playing.
So it was just one of those things where I would go and just do my thing. So it was a very unusual thing. And in fact, my voice, I guess everybody has different opinions about it, but you know, when you listen to someone like Johnny Cash.
Right.
When I listen to Johnny Cash, I just think the soul of the man lives in the voice. It's not that
yeah.
he's a particularly amazing singer. What makes him amazing is that he lets his soul come through his mouth when he's singing.
Right. Yeah.
And when you put him next to an opera singer, it's very different. So I always kind of feel like I'm not a singer, I just sing.
Right.
And I feel very honest about that. But that's what's been so amazing. And even when I listen back to those early recordings, I hear the pain in my body, in the voice. I hear where it's difficult for me to sing because my neck wouldn't move. I mean, when I recorded, I remember how I had to be positioned. It was very difficult. I couldn't sit for long periods of time. I would record for maybe the first 15 minutes, and then I'd have to go move because I had so much pain in my pelvis. So, you know, I hear those things.
Uh-huh.
But that's also the soul of the person coming through the vocal. So is it
yeah.
bad or is it good? I don't know. But it's just there, documented on tape.
Well, that's really fantastic. I just can't believe, I mean, you went from really having all this difficulty in your voice and then to singing. It's and being so renowned for that now. It's just incredible. I just think it's amazing. It's what an incredible story, success story, really.
It is an amazing thing. I have wonder about it myself, but I see that too, because, you know, like...
Now, you said you're still healing, or you feel like you're still healing. Are there things that you're still noticing that you're improving that aren't?
I mean, I still walk with a cane, and
uh-huh.
there are days when I need it more than others.
Right.
When I'm at home and I'm alone, well, I can't really say home. I live in hotels, but when I'm in a place that I know... and I feel comfortable and there's no sharp edges or anything, I'll do my best to try to journey around in a little space where I don't need it. But what I have is I have residual vertigo, which hasn't left. It's like an imbalance that comes in sometimes because of hypertonicity. My body gets so tight from travel that I really rely upon it. But then, you know, I did my first gig about a year ago in London in November.
Uh-huh.
It was the first time I had taken the cane and put it next to me and just stood at the mic and counted on my balance to hold myself still.
Uh-huh.
And then I started learning Argentinian tango, which is the only dance that I found where if you're about to fall, your partner can grab you. And I had an amazing teacher who taught me. And you know what it did? It instilled a more muscular connection in my body with what's about to happen when you feel as though you're going to fall. It gave my body confidence. And so the dance was a huge thing for me. And it's funny. It's like I walk with a cane, but I can dance tango. Does that make sense? Well, no, not to the layperson, but when you think about it, it's kind of amazing.
Yes, it's like it's sort of like the musical therapy, but in a body form, sort of.
Exactly.
Yes, really fantastic. It's amazing. So, what is your schedule like now? How is it, and how do you keep up to eating well on all of your travels?
Well, this is a difficult thing, you know, because you're subject to so many things. You're subject to multiple kinds of climate, and I've been on tour now since the middle of February this year alone, and nonstop. We had a 90-day tour that had a 6-day break. Then we started up in the States, and now we have a 4-day break, but I'm working in studios. I'm calling you from a studio now, and then we go back to Europe, and we finish in August. You have to love it if you're going to do it, because if you don't, in the weak moments when you feel as though you can't, nothing will pull you through. So... You know, the sacred art of music is that, when you keep it that way. But when you lose that, then all of a sudden you have a moment when you forget and you really let yourself fall through, and you can't. Because you have to understand, like, what you're doing is you're basically bringing energy to people, tossing it to them, they're tossing it back, and then going. I think Max Roach, I think, was the guy. I could be talking about the wrong gentleman, but I have a great bassist. He's played with all the people in the world you can imagine. And he told me this quote from I think it was from Max, from way back in the day, which was that the spirit comes through you, whatever it is. It's not really a religious thing. It's just about energy. You know, the spirit comes through you, goes through you to your instrument, through the instrument to the people, back to you from the people, and back up above. It's a perfect figure eight. It just cycles around, and you have to be able to handle it. And it's not that you're not a capable musician or not that you're not having a good day. It's that you're not in a place to receive whatever that is that you're trying to do without force.
Yeah.
You have to realize that comes there, especially as a writer. You have to go back to that place every time. So keeping your body and your spirit and that nucleus intact is essential, and that comes down to your environment. That's why the food is so important. You know, I found this really great partner in Jamie by going to his website, themacrobiotic.co.uk.
Yes.
They had a list there of all the places in the world that you could go and you could find macrobiotic places. I mean, in Tokyo, of all places, I found a macrobiotic place. And then in London, I have, like, the place I always go to, and in L.A. It's hard sometimes in cities where the consciousness about food only extends to maybe that of, like, a fast food chain.
Right.
And they don't have it in their culture. It's neither their fault or anyone else's. It's just a cultural thing. So, for instance, you go to France and everything is wine and cheese, you know, and anything in moderation is okay. So you can possibly go in that direction. But if you're conscious of your body when you do, it has a repercussion, you know, immediately. And what I learned about the road is that you do need to kind of protect yourself to know how far you can go and how far you cannot go, because everything accumulates over time. So if you continue to eat badly, not only does your waist change, but your spirit and your energy changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we keep a rice cooker on the road, and we often make brown rice sushi in the bus and rice balls and things like that. And you can find miso soup in just about every Japanese place you go.
Right.
So you can find that. And a lot of places, you'd be surprised, are using brown rice and using, you know, those techniques. I usually survive in Japanese restaurants when I can't get exactly what I'm looking for macrobiotic-wise, because they have the closest thing to those principles in their style of cooking, you know, whether they're consciously aware of it or not. It's like if they can do what you're asking and they're comfortable, you can have the man prepare it any way you like and then avoid certain ingredients and avoid certain things that you know you're not supposed to have. So it can be done, but I carry everything with me. I have all the little nutrients, and I have like a pantry that I keep in my suitcase. And
wonderful.
My little kombu and my little sea salt and my little shoyu and my tamari and my mirin and whatever else I'm looking for that is difficult to find. I always have instant miso soups for the plane. It's one of the only things that helps to alkalize your blood, you know, when you're flying. And so I fast a lot. I have to be honest. I mean, in this last tour, since November, I lost about 16 pounds because I just would rather not eat than eat the wrong thing.
Right, yes.
So my body's thinned out, but it's not bad.
Uh-huh.
I'm not suffering.
Yes, right.
It's just, you have to look. And I always find Inari packets and little things in different places and, like, stash them on the bus because they never go bad. And same with umeboshis and stuff like that.
That's wonderful. That's great. Yes, I know other performers and actors who carry a suitcase, their little portable pantry in their suitcase.
It's true.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And you have blessings in certain areas. I mean, New York, L.A., San Francisco... They have places where they get it to the point where you have, like, macrobiotic gastronomic places, you know, extensive and beautiful, and you do have it in certain cultures too, but you have to find it, you have to dig, and in the pitfalls of it all, if you can't, you have to find a way to amend and at least know your limitations so you know what to do. I have to tell you, though, my greatest cultural surprises have been in Southeast Asia when we go to places like Korea and we go to places like Japan, because Korea actually uses a lot of the foods that are in macrobiotics in their major components of cooking, especially in lotus roots and things like that. I was freaking out. They didn't understand why I knew this food. They were like, how do you know this? And, you know, they had in the airport, they had a soup, which was like rice that had been long cooked with sweet potatoes, but then they had another thing which was a sweet potato soup with mochi, and then they had one which was adduki beans with mochi as well, and my assistant and I freaked out. That was the best food we could find, and it was right there in the airport. We were like, get out of town, you know, so.
That's great. So your assistant, and is your whole band into macrobiotics now?
No, you know, I travel with a few French gentlemen and a few other guys, but most of them are vegetarian or vegan. There's not too many. I mean, outside of the French guys, because you can't you know, limit someone's experience because of their culture. They have a culture and they have a health based on that, so that works for them. But my drummer and my tour manager, my assistant, and my sax player, he also plays a couple of other things, all very healthy, very, very well-minded individuals. And that's what's great, is that in the traveling journey, in the caravan that you make, because we're all just on a gypsy caravan, it's a bit like pirates. If you have more like-minded people around you, then the flow is much nicer, because you all have the same energy, you know, and you're just all going through in the same way. And it's, the arguments aren't about what to eat. It's like, how come I don't get tofu? You know, it's like, who gets to have this packet? And you know, like, it's a funny way to live. But yeah, we all pretty much eat the same to some degree, if not microbiotic, vegetarian, and very organic rooted, you know.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, I know I promised you it wouldn't be too long, but you've given me plenty of time in your busy schedule. But I just want to say that you know, that energy that you were describing, the figure eight. When I saw you in concert, you definitely had that, and you were definitely giving that out. I mean, you really seem to know intuitively. I don't know if you do it intentionally, but it seems to happen naturally, which is really fabulous, and certainly has led to your success, I'm sure. So it's really wonderful. Do you have any messages to the people who might be listening to this, any words of inspiration?
Well,
in fact, we did have a caller whose I think son or daughter had an accident and was also a musician and was wondering how macrobiotics helped them. So if there's anything else besides what we've talked about that might inspire
them. Thinking over a bite of a garden roll. I have to condense what I want to say, because it's quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you're dealing with the nature of an accident, there are so many things that come up as priorities that you must address. Sorry, my bracelet just clanged. There are so many things that come up in the nature of the things that you must address. You know, priorities are there. You have to comb through them all and go, which is first, which is second, which is third, how do we handle this, how do we fit this in? The scheduling for a recovery is almost as intense as the scheduling of a musician. I mean, you have so many facets you must address, whether it's whether it's just a physical component or not, because even one fracture, if it limits the functioning ability of a human being to what they used to be able to do, that's an emotional burden and it's a spiritual burden.
Yes.
When you talk about macrobiotics, it's everything connected, because you must be aware of yourself. You must be aware of what your condition is. Sometimes you need someone to guide you if you're not able to feel that within yourself. You need to be aware of how you feel immediately after trying something, whether or not it agrees with you, whether or not the process of this agrees with you, because there's a lot of commitment and dedication involved in the preparation of the foods.
Yes.
You have to be prepared to take a journey through a supermarket where you may not understand what's on the package. You know,
yes.
You have to know what to look for. There's a little bit of a prehistory that you have to get. You have to research things and then understand why. I think that book, that Macrobiotic Total Health, is a great beginning space for someone to start, just because I felt that. And there were other books as well I found afterwards that dealt with different things, but as I looked at it, I felt blessed that that was the first one I found, because, like I said, it had not only recipes but also case studies and explanations about things, and it was just enough to give you a sampling of everything, and if you needed to dive further, you could get a secondary piece of literature. But it was a good place to begin. And if you're prepared to take a journey to total health, you have to understand that there's no answer in one thing. It's not just one piece. Everybody has a different element of satisfaction that they may feel. But if you can be conscious, especially if you're stepping away from medicine in order to try and find a solution here,
uh-huh.
it's a growing pain. You have to accept it all and then go through it and learn it and then start to embrace it all around you. And it's really helpful to have someone beside you through that process who can join you, because the cooking you're doing,
yes.
it's not for one person.
Yes.
You know, it's always so big. So if you have a son or a daughter who you would like to try and put them in this direction, you know, to enlighten them about this particular way of eating,
yes.
be prepared to do it with them and alongside them, because or turn your family onto it, because what will be difficult is not necessarily even the learning and the preparation and everything, because that's the beautiful part. That's the creativity, and you can always shift and change the recipe as you feel needed to you a little bit, to your taste buds or to your condition. But if you're doing it while the person next to you is making a vat of roast beef, you know, there's a contrast there. You need to have everybody on board or the ship doesn't sail. You
yeah.
know, it's like that must be a momentum there. So if someone was trying to take care of a loved one, either older or younger, it would be helpful to give them a sense of community about it and really support them by partaking and see how their own lives change, because you never know. The blessing might be not only that you could help them, but you help yourself in the process.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a group thing, and I would suggest that for sure. And to be patient, because nothing is overnight. Like I said, it took me the first 3 months to notice a difference. It's like when you begin an exercise program, it's that 90-day thing. They say you don't actually notice huge changes. There's always little changes along the way. Things become and feel more better. Your taste buds may change. A lot of the food for someone who eats very heavy, spicy foods, you have to let your palate dissolve from that and come to a place where it understands the breadth and the beauty of a grain of rice. I mean, rice with some salt and some gomasio, or just a little bit of sesame. I mean, even the way you make tea, if you roast brown rice and then make a tea from it, it has a flavor that, if your palate is full and used to these things which are very aromatic and bright from different cultures, you may not even taste it. But you have to give yourself the time to decompress from everything you've done and allow yourself to flow with grace into this particular way of living. And it's not very fast. So you have to be patient with yourself and with everyone else around you so you can fully experience it. And if for some reason you find that it's problematic or whatever, perhaps it's not down to the lifestyle that is being proposed. It's down to your lifestyle. You know, you have to realize there's a time and a place for everything. And this is an option for someone who's able and willing to embrace it, and it can be very beautiful. And what's funny is, like religion, like spirituality, like Buddhism,
yeah.
when I started eating macrobiotics, all of a sudden everyone in my world kind of came to that same place. And it was not with a forced hand. I wasn't telling anyone about it, giving them literature and door to door or anything like that, but I just started to find like-minded people. And the same thing happened with Buddhism. So, you know, it's funny, your life changes and shifts as you change and shift. And it's like that that prophecy of existence. You are the creator of your day from beginning to end. And if you make it high and vibrational in the sense that you embrace everything around you and you take great care and live with a high frequency of love, then that's what flows from you and that's what comes back to you. And that's why the energy of being a performer is the same thing. It's the figure eight. It's everything from the way you stand on stage in front of a public to the way you hand over a plate of food to your son or daughter. The love that's there is felt and reciprocated and enjoyed. And that, to me, is how the beauty of existence flows.
Wow. That was a fabulous, fabulous message. Thank you, and that was so precise in explaining it in terms of the performance and then serving the meal. That was really fabulous. Really, thank you so much. So, just in closing, you have an album coming out soon, or what are your future?
In August, I'm going to be taking a great deal of time off for the first time in 3 years, and I'll be working on a few things, and an album is certainly one of them. I have a small EP which I'm working on now that'll come out very soon, which is a very personal and intimate look at some songs that my mother had sang to me. So it's not by any means like a mark of a writer. It's not that I'm ceasing to write either, but these were just sort of lullabies that were really beautiful to me, and I found myself singing them to calm myself after gigs and things. And so we just put together a small thing. It's very relaxing. It'd be something for a mother or a child, but we're finishing that now. Very small project that I did with a beautiful guitarist friend of mine from London. And then in the absence of being around, I have other side projects I've done. I'm a guest on many different records. And that's been nice for me because your creativity doesn't die. Your availability ceases to exist the way it was. And now, as August approaches, I'll have that time to create and craft the new record. And that'll probably be, you'll probably hear about it in 9 months to a year, because that's how long these things take. But in the interim, I'll be doing tiny little things here and there, so you'll see that.
Well, okay. Well, thank you so much again for your time. I know you're really busy. You're in the studio recording that.
Oh, yeah. It's not a problem. It's a pleasure. Anytime. Really, anytime. And I do apologize for the lack of the ability for us to connect today. My connectivity has been cut down. My computer doesn't exist at this moment. It was fried by a bad can of lemon Pellegrino. And the cell phone, which I was supposed to have for this conversation, I sent back with my assistant to Philadelphia. So I hopped on a friend's computer when I saw you and was able to stay quickly. So thank you.
Yes. No, it's fine. But perhaps when you come back, I know you're going out of the country, but when you come back, perhaps you can contact me and we can reschedule a call.
Or maybe we can meet. I have something that I'm putting together in the next little bit of time, and it'd be interesting to have your input and your words on. So.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd be honored. Yes, absolutely. So anyways, just for our cause, thanks again. That was Melody Gardot, Grammy-nominated, multi-platinum album recording artist. Fabulous. Her album, My One and Only Thrill, if you don't have it, please get it. It's a beautiful, beautiful work. Her website is www.melodygardot.com. You can find out about all of her information, her tours, and the things that she's up to through the website. And again, thanks, Melody, so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. And all the best, always.
Yes. Such an inspiration to everybody, and just fabulous. So
thank you for all the work you do with macrobiotics too. It's beautiful, really beautiful.
Well, thank you. So have a great time, and have a great. I'm sorry to interrupt your meal, but please enjoy.
No, it's
too well.
And as they say in France, bonne continuation. À très bientôt.
Yes, and we'll stay in touch definitely. And so have a great evening, and thank you again.
You too. Ciao. Take care.
Right. Bye-bye.